Hello and welcome to Burkamp Wonderland, a World Cup special, second time lucky. Just going to go and see if this is actually working, because last time the internet decided to not work.
It is.
There you go. We've got wonderful pictures. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming back with us. That was 4 minutes of our life we were never, ever going to get back. Right, where were we? First of all, we have Drew, who is in the USA, but is an oracle on all things German. You all right, Drew?
Hey, good to be back. Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
I am just as good as the first time you asked, but we'll pretend that never happened and do it all over again. Yeah. Also, from someone else from USA, Canada, Mexico, 2026 representative, it's only Jeff in Canada. Hello, Jeff.
How are you, fella?
Oh, gee. Oh, gee. Oh, gee.
Oh, gee. Oh, gee. Oh, gee. Danny, Danny, Danny.
We did that.
I wasn't going to do that again. You know what? The last time we did this, I had the best introduction ever.
Go on.
But unfortunately, we can't. Lightning doesn't strike twice. So this is just a tribute if you're a fan of the Tenacious D. So, nice to see all of you guys. I'm looking forward to talking a little World Cup today or this evening and having a bit of fun.
Jolly good. And finally, we have Steve in sunny, sunny, sunny Poland, who's been spending the afternoon in the back of an Austin Allegro. You all right, Steve?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's a lovely 33 degrees here. I am. Spent the day in the park, actually, in between watching old communist TV programs on using the Wi-Fi in the park. Yes, you heard that right. We have Wi-Fi in the park. And I bought a mobile air conditioner on the Polish equivalent of eBay as well, just to make sure I don't die of terminal Betty Swallocks in the next 4 weeks.
Ah, oh, good old Betty. It's been about a million degrees here. We haven't had rain for over a month, and there's no more predicted for at least another 1 to 2 weeks. It's going to be fantastic. Right, we're going to go and say hello to a few people that have rejoined us for the restart. Thunder Road, it's a shambles. Ah, oh, Thunder Road, we, that's why we like it. It might be the DK, the winner of the two Arsenal shirts from many moons ago. Bit of a cheeky monkey. He says, come on, Az Wenger could have got this zipper up quicker than this. Lovely Taj is there. Our very own Mr. Goonaholic, who was on the last World Cup one, he's there. Loki 73 says, what would Jason say? We have no idea what Jason says, because no one can understand a bloody word that he says most of the time. We just know that it's not very nice. Mark Wignall, this control alt delete is taking a while. I don't know. This is maybe show number 700 we've done between the two radio shows and podcasts. And it's only the second time that's ever done that for me. Ryan Cost is there. Kieran 4215 is there. Chris Tunmore is only my favourite wrestler in the world ever. All right, Chris. I was meant to mess with my mate Dan, who was around here last night. We were doing panini swaps. He said, when you're on next, give me a shout. Jove82. All right, Jonas, how are you? Archie, Alan Cracker, Kevo Gunner, Mark Wignall. I think I might have said you twice. Fellaini's going out to Man United. Joshua Page, our very own Josh there, Mystic Josh. We still haven't told the story about that. Hassan is there. Michael is there. Where else? MY25, Ryan. Oh, Ahmed in sunny, sunny, hot Russia. You all right, mate? Hey, big show. Dean Stanley, a cheeky Everton fan. Dean, are you supporting England? Because you're not only you're a plastic Everton fan who never goes to games, plastic Paddy, isn't he? It's terrible. He's as English as I am. Right, I'm going to get on with some of this. I might read out some more names later on. Dean's put come on, Ireland. Right, first of all, I'd like Drew, a couple of minutes, if you can, just talk us through the one of the most shocking displays from a team in World Cup that I can ever remember since the last time Germany well and truly screwed it up. They finished their World Cup campaign with two losses, one win, which was a 95th minute winner against Sweden by Toni Kroos. What's your summary of just what went wrong with Germany, and do you expect them to do what they did last time this happened and then just scrap everything and start again?
I think it's a bit shocking, but also not. If you think back to Euro 2016, they struggled in that tournament as well, especially in the group stage. And I think the warning signs were there, and I don't think that Jürgen Klopp did enough to really look at the evidence and make enough changes. He's not system didn't have to change, but it had to be revamped, and it never was. There was a heavy reliance on certain systems, you know, like the Thomas Müller, Joshua Kimmich right flank. That served them well. It serves Bayern well, but even you saw it against Mexico, didn't you? You know, they just tried to hammer the right flank for the entirety of 90 minutes, and it just didn't work. When it didn't work, there wasn't a plan B. There was horrible movement off the ball. There's a lot of questions about player mentality in the camps. overall, I think most of the blame has to fall on Jurgen Löw himself. You know, I know he didn't step down, and a lot of people think he should have. I guess something to be said for stability of keeping him and seeing if he can work through it. I don't think there'll be the whole operation, obviously, but there needs to be some changes, specifically tactically. Certain players do need to be moved away from and other players given a chance. You know, the likes of Julian Brandt, who I think did more in 30 minutes of football than Thomas Müller did in the entire tournament. I think that says a lot. You know, so again, it's frustrating. Obviously, from the tournament favorite, you expect them to do a bit better. But I think if you're really honest about it, there were warning signs that they didn't pay attention to, and I think this is the culmination of it.
What do you make of the whole everyone blaming Ozil situation? What's behind that, and do you think this can be the end of him playing for Germany?
I mean, I don't know, but it's funny. Arsene Wenger came out for BN Sports and was talking about the Ozil situation, and he said you could look at him and you could tell that he wasn't the Ozil that he knows. I think a lot of that has to do with the mental side of the game. I think we as fans forget that footballers are actually human as well. They have emotions. They go through emotions. And I think Ozil at Arsenal goes under enormous amount of pressure, and that pressure doesn't subside when it's in a Germany team. And despite those other players in that Germany team that have as much responsibility as he does, the likes of Toni Kroos is one of them. But the axe seems to always fall on him when things go awry. And I think as a human being, that can be a lot of weight to try to deal with. I don't think we really consider that, honestly, as fans. I think he might step down, he might not. I'm not really quite sure. But, you know, he's pushing on in age eventually, and there are a lot of young players coming through the system who can step into his role if he does want to step down. So Germany, as an entity, will be okay in the long run. But I don't think the axe can fall on him for this tournament. Like we talked about pre-recording that there was 5, 6, 7 other German players who were far worse than he was, but yet still the blame is falling on him. And people will look to the situation saying, oh, well, you know, he's a German-born Turk, and the things with Erdogan. I think the Erdogan issue is bigger than the fact that he is, in fact, a German-born Turk. You know, Turks are completely integrated into German society, so it's not really a big deal as it used to be maybe 20 or 30 years ago. But the Erdogan thing, I think, is being used as a scapegoat. And, you know, we were talking about before we started, this happened before the World Cup, so if it was that big of a deal, the issues would have been cropped up long before the tournament even started, but they weren't. They were mentioned, but the flack that he's getting, he didn't receive before the tournament. But he's getting it now, and it just seems very convenient that he's getting it now after Germany failed to perform. It's just a very convenient way of saying, oh, look, this happened. This is a distraction. Everyone can blame Ozil. And it's funny that the ex-pros that are backing him and the ex-pros that are blaming him, and you can see this sort of similarities of the two camps. Just a lot of people are still very, very pro natural German. And since Ozil technically isn't a natural German, just by his bloodline, some will look and say, well, it's easy just to blame him instead of blaming someone like a Thomas Müller or a Toni Kroos, who are, you know, very prototypical German. You know, it's easier to blame someone who can be perceived as an outsider, not just in appearance, but in personality as well. You know, Thomas Müller is very media friendly. He loves to make jokes. You know, he's charismatic in that regard. A lot of other German players are, but, you know, Ozil really isn't. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, cheers for that. That's very interesting. Steve, many times we've talked about Podolski, and how did Podolski see himself? Did he see himself as a Pole or as a German? Because, you know, I had a disagreement with Rafi Honigstein about that. I said that I was told that he considered himself still as a Poland, and did he still live there or travel there every day? Because that is a similar kind of thing with him as it was with Ozil. But I don't ever remember them getting on Podolski's back.
Well, Podolski backed Ozil, and I think it's pretty fair to say actually Podolski considered himself to be German first and foremost. He had a great deal of love for his birth country, but it was Germany that gave him his opportunity, his new life and his career, and he gave his parents a new life. Having said that, Podolski has a great deal of feeling for Poland. He actually runs and sponsors orphanages here, and he has, it's had one in Warsaw, I think it's got 100 kids at it, who he physically supports, mentors, goes there, supplies the sports equipment, and he pays a lot of money to help run those places. But Podolski, first and foremost, you know, was part of the German team and one of their, you know, biggest stars and scorers. I think really the thing to sort of add on to what Drew was saying, what I've seen, is that the signs were there before the World Cup when Germany had a hideous draw with Saudi Arabia and they had a few get out of jail sort of last minute 1-0 wins, and nothing was really addressed. But if you really, you know, there might be those people sitting there going, oh, well, he's not an actual German, let's dig him out. But I mean, the Bayern Munich crowd in that German squad have got a lot to answer for. As Drew said, Thomas Müller stank the World Cup out. He was absolutely appalling. Kimmich didn't really do his business well, got forward well. When he got there, didn't know what to do with it. Kroos, okay, scored a brilliant last-minute goal, but was responsible for a couple of goals that they had scored against them. If you look at Ozil's stats, is it his fault that Hummels headed a brilliant cross over the bar? No. Is it his fault that crosses he put in and created great chances for people, they couldn't score them? No, it's not. And I do feel that he's being scapegoated, firstly, because of his ethnic origins. I think, secondly, the Erdogan thing, a lot of people said, oh, it was a mistake. I think people need to understand you don't say no to someone like Erdogan if you're of Turkish extraction. And let's be selfish, from an Arsenal point of view, if Ozil retires from international football, that'll only lengthen his career and make him fitter for us. And what I would like to say is that there are a lot of people in the extreme right wing of politics in Germany trying to exploit this situation, and they're trying to scapegoat Ozil for the early exit of the German national team. All I can say is come home to Arsenal, son. There's no racial discrimination there. Arsenal's for everybody.
Very well put, Steve. Jeff, we know this isn't an Ozil wonderland yet. What's your thoughts on the situation? People are only talking about this a lot because this could massively affect Ozil for the upcoming season. And he is our highest paid player, one of our most influential players. And as much as I moan about him, he is probably the most skillful player that we've had at the club since Dennis Bergkamp. So what's your thoughts on it, Jeff, before we move on?
I think Steve and Drew covered it well. I think that there were many other players in that German side that were equally, if not more, culpable for the results that they had. Let's be honest, a bunch of pros, the way they were defending or not defending in those three games, there was almost an arrogance about that side that they thought that their system was going to work better than anyone else. But for a bunch of pros to be that wide open at the back and that susceptible to a counterattack, Ozil's not the reason why both fullbacks were caught up front, caught up forward, leaving only the center backs at the back in that first game. Ozil, you know, he didn't have a great tournament. Ooh, getting that there, boys. I'm getting some tiling done. It's not quiet. They've just gotten started. It's like I'm at the dentist. I tell you what, I'm gonna stop myself there because of the sound in the background, but I'll go deal with that. But yeah. Okay. Yeah, no worries.
All right, cheers. Yeah, people, I was talking to Jeff this afternoon for about an hour, and he said, oh, hope we get this done before the decorators turn up, because he's having some work done in his bathroom. And so before, it's just a little bit of scraping, but now it seems like they've got the cement mixer out. So we'll go on about Jeff for just a little while. Come back to you, Drew. The quarterfinal, we'll just move on to the quarterfinals now, because that's what people are listening for. We've already covered all the other stuff. Which of the quarterfinals would you like to speak about?
Whichever is easier for you, honestly, it doesn't really matter to me. Pick one.
I'll get you to do the France Uruguay one, because France were incredibly impressive. It's always been in World Cups that teams that don't have a great start often go on, pick up speed and do well. What do you think about the France Uruguay game? What do you think about the number 14, a little someone special called Torreira?
Torreira.
Torreira, thank you very much, Steve. What do you think of his performance? Because I don't think he had that much of a brilliant game, especially as he was standing there as Griezmann had that final shot, didn't he?
I think you're spot on with your assessment of teams that grow in tournaments usually last longer. And I'm sure we'll come on to it later, but I think that's why people are not questioning Croatia, because they looked brilliant in the group stage, but now they seem to be petering out a little bit. But that's another discussion for later. In regards to France, you know, I think coming in, if you asked 10 people who their maybe four or five favorites of the tournament was, 9 would have said France was in their top 5 for sure. You know, they're a young squad, but that talent pool is quite deep. You know, when you can bring Olivier Giroud off the bench, I think, you know, you're in good shape. For me, I think you saw how well-balanced they can be. They can possess the ball well. You know, they can hit you on the breakthrough, Mbappe, as an example. I just think that they have an enormous amount of contrasting weapons that they can deal with almost any situation that's presented against them in terms of on a tactical level. I think that's what you need. You need to be flexible. And I think as long as Deschamps is willing to be able to tweak things, the system, one or two players who should or shouldn't be starting based off of who his opponent is, I think France can go on to win it. Whether they will or not, it's another story. But I also think on the flip side, when you look at Uruguay, I think they did incredibly well for a team who is obviously renowned for their defensive prowess. You know, you have Godin and Jimenez at the back. Muslera, who normally is more self-assured than that. And their team game is predicated on just that. You know, they work as a unit. It's a very team-based performance, and you look for Suarez and Cavani to get the goals. Now, I think that missing Cavani was the big issue. You know, Stuani comes in, and obviously, you know, he's a solid enough player, but he's not Cavani. Cavani demands an enormous amount of respect. You know, just being on a pitch, he will drag one or two defenders with him because you have to respect his ability. I think it also affected the Suarez as well. I think they've had such a strong partnership since under-21s, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're going into the knockout stage and you don't have that. And it's like you're missing your right-hand man, and I think that played a role. As for Torreira, I think it's funny that everyone all of a sudden has now become an expert on him, and no one was talking about him before, you know, the last 2 or 3 months. I think he's a solid enough player. I don't think you can look at his stature and say, well, he won't survive the Premier League, because you can look at N'Golo Kante and say, look how well he's done since he went to Leicester and not Chelsea. And now he's one of the most important players for France. I think the tools are there for him to be successful at Arsenal. I think, well, I didn't have his best game for France. I think you saw, against France, rather. I think you saw over the course of the tournament, he also grew into the tournament as he started getting starts, because he didn't start the first two matches. I think he's done well. You know, he's a good ball winner. He's aggressive. He has good technical ability. So he's not going to be that destroyer of a holding midfielder that people would have wanted, like an Nzonzi, for an example. But he will be a ball winner, more like a Makelele, which is kind of almost like what Kante is. And I think that's a more modern take on what you want as that link between midfield and defense. And hopefully it works out for us.
Yeah, so Chris is happy. Lana is, well, kind of happy and unhappy, because she hates Deschamps, and so they're the only two people I know that support France. But for me, I think France are looking really, really good. Jeff, can get a little. We've got more time with you now. Have you sorted out the volume?
We'll see how we go for now.
Yeah, you had to put in their ass. Oh, can we say that?
Yeah, it's all good. No, you can't say that.
No, we're a polite pod now. Yeah. Right, so where's my page I was up to? Right, would you like the Brazil game or the... Steve, do you want the England game? You're following England this tournament, aren't you, Steve? You're muted.
He's taking a big drink or something.
Yeah, bearing in mind that was coconut water. Bearing in mind I'm semi-retired these days, I've been watching every game because I'm a lazy git.
Okay, right then. So, Jeff, which game? Would you like the Brazil one or the Russia-Croatia one?
I'll do the Brazil one. That's fine. I mean, I think ultimately Brazil's got to be disappointed with the way they've gone out of this tournament. Having watched them right from the first game, I thought that Neymar was a bit of a liability for them. He was constantly getting caught on the ball, trying to do a bit too much. For the defense that they had, for the players that they had, you'd have to think that they'd be in a semifinal. I mean, every single player down to the man is a strong player. I think as much as Neymar got a lot of the attention negatively, I think Coutinho flew under the radar a little bit. He's absolutely excellent for me. But they, you know, ultimately we saw a Belgium team that woke up and actually played a decent game, played an excellent game. Hazard in particular was terrific in the way that he was running at their offense, getting in behind. So for me, ultimately, Brazil going out was very disappointing. But at the end of the day, well on to Belgium.
He's muted himself very quickly there. Sorry, people. It doesn't really matter. You can hear what he's saying. Yeah, I agree with what you were saying there, Jeff, that Brazil, if they'd have spent less time rolling around on the floor pretending they were injured. I mean, Jesus actually did one, didn't he? It looked like at first sight that he had been fouled and went for a dive, but then looking at the replay, I think everyone was agreed that it wasn't actually a foul, and they could well have had a penalty there. But Belgium are looking very, very strong. So,
well, I mean, I think Brazil's biggest problem is Neymar. I mean, he's a great player, but he's not he's not Ronaldinho, he's not the original Ronaldo, he's not Zico, he's not Pele, and he's not any of the greats ever in the past. And the whole circus around him and his entourage, the way that they pissed around at PSG, virtually getting Emery the sack, thank God, so we got him, but and making him change the system because he didn't like it, and not turning up for training, doing this, that. And it's the same thing in Brazil, you know. There was a game where he was trying to do everything himself and it just went horribly wrong. And they got through it somehow. And the problem with it is, you know, when you've got memes of you doing endless roles on the internet, the referees, and they see that. And, you know, there was plenty of times in that game against Belgium where he was fouled. It just wasn't given because he got a reputation for it. But I think Belgium very cleverly sussed them out. Brazil are bloody awful and they haven't got the ball. And in previous games against lesser opposition, they got away with it. But Belgium, I mean, particularly Hazard, he was just, when his teammates were dead and out, he was just like running them into corners and running them down blind alleys and just holding the ball up and ticking the clock off, making space all over the place.
I noticed in the second half that Hazard, rather than crossing the ball or a low cross to Lukaku, he had his shot himself. And you could see how much the entire Belgian team respect Hazard. Lukaku just went and walked off. Didn't go, what the hell are you doing? What was your thoughts on the game, Drew? And Brazil?
I think for Brazil, when your star player doesn't turn up, I think it's difficult. But that said, I think a lot of them, it's funny because I just, you know, we were just talking about those things, but I think Neymar actually did sort of screw the pooch for Brazil a little bit. And I think that also comes down to maybe more of a human element. So before kickoff, Neymar would have sat there and noticed that, you know, Messi is now out of the tournament. Ronaldo is now out of the tournament. And people have always been bigging up Neymar as the third best player in the world. And now I think he had that discussion with himself to say, you know what, now this is my tournament to take over now. And I think that was the mistake that he made. I think that was the mistake that his teammates also allowed him to make. You know, I don't think Brazil has been particularly brilliant this tournament, but they do have enough quality, you know, to go through and to maybe make a run for a foul. And that's not taking anything away from Belgium. I think Belgium have been great. They've also grown into the tournament. But Brazil are better than what they showed. But I think a lot of that has to come down to two factors. One, I think Neymar tried to do too much on his own because he wanted them to become the star of the show, because that's the kind of player he is. But also B, the coach and his teammates didn't sort of ring him in and say, you know what, we have to do this as a unit. You know, players don't single-handedly win World Cups anymore. You know, the last player to genuinely do that was probably Maradona. You know, it's just football has evolved too much for that to happen anymore. So I think, in terms of Brazil in that match, they could have done better. I think could have done better over the course of the tournament. As for Belgium, I think they've been very, very good. And some Archie just pointed out before that when you use Kevin De Bruyne in a manner that suits him better when he's more further forward, you get the best out of him, and thus you get even more product and product out of Eden Hazard and Romelu Lukaku. But for me, I do think there are some warning signs for Belgium as well. They don't have very good fullbacks, and by extension, now they don't have very good wingbacks. I think Meunier's done okay. You know, Carrasco wasn't great on the left, so he's been replaced. But I think the weakness there is going to be against a side who is going to know how to properly stretch them at the back, while also maybe pinning De Bruyne a bit deeper. If you play against a team like that, I don't think Belgium's going to get through and make a run to the final. But that said, anything is possible. But I do think they've done well enough to get past Brazil. But I think Brazil sort of made it a little bit easier for them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jeff, how are the builders behaving themselves now?
No, not at all, actually. I think I'm going to have to graciously say goodnight. Because they were just, they're 3 hours late and they're going pretty loudly. So, and unfortunately, I'm going to just try and join you guys another time because this is driving me nuts here. So my apologies, but I think I'm going to just drop off here and leave you guys to it because this is ridiculous.
We can't make them stop because Mrs. OG will be sleeping shed again.
No, I'll be in trouble. So good night, and I'll join again soon, guys.
All right. Cheers, Jeff.
Cheers. Bye now.
See you later.
Cheers.
Oh, that's a shame. We spoke for an hour today, and it's saying a little bit late. Right, it's just down to the three of us then. Okay, next game we're going to go and do. Steve, talk to me about Russia-Croatia. This is the only game I missed. I don't know if you've ever listened to LBC, Steve. There's a bloke on there called Nick Abbott. He hates everything to do with football. And I thought, I've got home from being out with Sean, and we went for a three-hour wander. And I thought, right, I'll put the radio on. I waited until the news was over. And then once it's Nick Abbott, he hates all kinds of sport. And then he's all about politics and stuff. And then someone sent in a text, now that Croatia have drawn 2-2 with Russia and beaten them on penalties, what does that? How does that affect Brexit? I thought, I can't bloody believe it. The only time I've ever heard sport mentioned on the show, so I didn't watch it. I just watched the highlights. Was it a good game?
No, not really. I think Drew sort of hinted at it earlier on as the tournament's gone on. Croatia started off, they were very high tempo, very much, you know, moving the ball about, loads of movement up front. And as the game's gone on, I think paying the price for having key parts of the squad in their late 20s and early 30s is that they peter out in games. They're unable to, they're not ruthless enough. Modric makes enough chances for them, Perisic, and they make enough chances, but they're not taking the chances they met early on in games to finish teams off. And of course, unfortunately, as they have gone in front, they then do an Arsenal and concede a goal. Then they're pushing and pressing and pressing, and then they get caught out, and then they've got to come back. In the previous game against Denmark, there was a very strange situation where I think it was Rebic got let free, and one-on-one with the keeper, he went round Schmeichel and got brought down by a centre-half who appeared from nowhere. And the guy got booked, the penalty was given, and Modric missed it, and he missed it because he was fatigued. There's no doubt about that. And you can debate the situation whether it should have been a penalty goal, because I don't see that Croatia got any, you know, advantage out of it, and I definitely think that Denmark got a bloody big advantage. I mean, they eventually lost on pens. But to go back to the Russia game, I mean, Russia are the home team. There's big questions about how a bunch of 30-year-olds are running the biggest distances for the longest amount of time in games. But they have been, you know, they're on ranking, they're the worst hosts ever in ranking. But they have put on some good performances. They blocked, they frustrated, and they tried to parry Croatia. They scored a wonderful goal to equalise. Well, wonderful goal to go in front. Croatia equalised. And then we sort of had this awful, awful Mogadon period. It seemed to go on forever. Pass, pass, pass. Sideways, sideways, sideways. It was just as if, you know, Mikel Arteta had been supplanted into the midfield, and they were going left and right, getting down the sideways, passing it back, you know, trying to march through the middle when it was going nowhere. And then, you know, Croatia scored. And you thought, oh, well, great, thank Christ for that. This is it, Russia's out. The whole of Poland were dancing around for obvious reasons.
That's his first ever goal, wasn't it? And then he took his shirt off, which is a stupid thing to do, because if they make it through to the... they wiped all the yellow cards, didn't they?
No, they didn't.
No, I mean, no, for the, once you get to, past the quarterfinals, they wipe all the cards. So, yeah, I was just... Well,
I mean, it was confusing. But, I mean, the guy scored a goal. They went mental. And then, of course, they conceded in the last minute because they didn't... They were, tiredness crept in. You know, not organising themselves at a corner. And Mandzukic, who's a Juventus player, who you would have think, you know, would be normally very, very well organised, just let his man go free, and the Russians scored, and it went to penalties, and you know, the right team won. I remember saying after the game they had against Denmark that surely they can't be this crap in the next game, that, you know, they'll fix it and they'll get better. I think if you're Gareth Southgate and Harry Kane and the lads watching that, you'll be thinking, good. They've had another game where they've had 30 minutes and penalties, and we've just sort of breezed through our game. We're sitting there nice and fresh. And, you know, if you're 24 or 26 years old, it takes you a lot less time to recover than it does if you're 32-year-old Modric, you know. And that could be a big factor in the England game, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's very important. Plus, in that weather, I mean, that's got to be like playing extra lengths of time during the game, because it's so depleting on your energy reserves, and just and playing all these games in such a short length of time. Drew, what was your thoughts on the game and Croatia when you think they were lucky to get through this? Like Steve said, against Denmark, penalties as well. That's really taken out of them.
I mean, I think it was an even match, so I think going to penalties is actually pretty fair. It's just, you know, they took their chances a bit better. But as I said before, I do think that while other teams have grown into the tournament, I think Croatia has actually regressed as the tournament's gone on. And bringing up fatigue, I think Knives is bigger going in to an England match on the back of successive penalty shootout wins. That's a lot of football that they've played. And it's only getting hotter in Russia, as we've seen before. You know, the temperature now we're getting to unbearable points. I think, and then you have a higher tempo England, have a lot of pace, you know, through Raheem Sterling as an example. I think Croatia might be at the end of their road. And I do think England might make the final in that match, which we might come on to later. But I think that Croatia relies far too heavily on Rakitic and Modric. And I think that they're wonderful footballers and they're great midfielders. But as C pointed out, they've had so many chances where they could kill games off, but they just don't have that quality in the final third to kill those situations off. I think that's a big issue. You think about someone like Ante Rebic, who had an excellent season with Eintracht Frankfurt, but he's playing in a different system and in a different role for Eintracht than he plays for Croatia. I think it shows because his game is not as polished, finished as for when he plays for Croatia. I think he's playing in unfamiliar territory. I think Mandzukic is a good target man. He holds up play well, but even he's guilty of spreading chances. And he had that same issue when he was at Bayern and you know, now with Juventus as well, that sometimes he needs 5, 6, 7, 8 chances before he actually puts one away. And I think that's going to be their undoing, because I do think they'll create chances against England, and they obviously created more chances against Russia. But again, they just have issues with finishing moves off, and I think that's going to be their undoing. I think defensively they're sound. You know, Subasic is a decent keeper. But I just think that when push comes to shove, better teams on their day probably could have beat Croatia. I mean, I think Russia's done brilliantly this World Cup, but I don't think that they have, you know, I don't think they had enough quality to really, A, dominate the match against Croatia, and B, garner enough chances to really pin Croatia back and then sort of take the game to them sufficiently enough. I think against a better team, I think Croatia will get found out, and I don't think we've seen that from their opponents just yet, but I think we will when they play England, so.
Yeah, very true. I mean, both their games kicked off at 9 p.m. local time. They've sort of had 4 hours worth of football and two lots of penalties in 6 days. Even the fittest of teams, that is going to take, even if it's just mentally, that the mental effects he's got to have having a penalty taker has got to be so rough for them. Right, final game. This will be between you two. You can just start this one, Steve. Sweden, England, because I'm not going to let my views on the England team ruin this show. So you two talk about England, Sweden. You start off, Steve, and let me know when you're done.
Yeah, Danny is now officially a Swedish IKEA hot dog for £1. I thought England's game plan was very good. I thought it was basically Sweden had got through their group, which was quite unexpected, tough for them. They'd done so by being very defensive. They'd been trying to hit teams on the break, and they had not actually faced a team that could keep them in their own half, not only for like a couple of maybe 15 minutes or a couple of intervals, but for most of the game. And I think, you know, for a lot of the game, Pickford was actually quite idle. I think Sterling got a lot of the usual rubbishing by the right-wing racist press, who probably had their Sterling to blame for Boris Johnson's resignation article ready. But I think, you know, Sterling did some admirable work, because what he was doing, he's running at them, pinning them back. He kept them in their own half. He made sure that England's game plan could work. Kane dropped deep, meant that their centre-backs actually didn't have the defender they thought they were going to be having a battle with to battle with. So there was some sort of like, well, what do we do in there? A bit disorganised. And all of a sudden they were getting, you know, England keeping the ball, passing it around, putting chances in. And of course, the very one thing you've got to be very careful of if you're going to play England is set pieces. And someone was obviously watching his bird in the crowd, or looking at a fit bird in the crowd, because he didn't see Harry Maguire sneak up behind him and belt it in the back of the net with his head. Absolute belter of a header. And after that, I think Sweden woke up a little bit, but never really saw anything of Forsberg. We've not really seen much of him in the World Cup. I think the way Sweden plays doesn't really fit the game that he plays in the Red Bull team. I think it's Leipzig that he plays for. And it's a shame, because he's a very talented player. He scored one great goal. But it's really ridiculous when you've got a player of that calibre not to use the talent. And England just went on to basically master the game, really. And it at the dying end, the Swedes got a couple of chances, but they didn't get to take them. And England sort of like, well, thank very much, move on to the next round, really.
True.
I think that's probably the best you're going to see from Sweden. I think we've already saw the best that you could see from them. For me, I know there was a lot of talk about, you know, Ibrahimovic not being a part of the team and Sweden thinking that they can do it without him. And I think that's admirable. I think they did show that they have some quality, but I think they lack enough quality. You know, you bring up Forsberg, and he's a different player for RB Leipzig because he plays in a more direct attacking, high tempo, high press system that Sweden plays. Sweden sit back and drop deep, and maybe they'll press you a little bit at certain points of the match, but it's not nearly as Bundesliga-esque as, you know, Forsberg is used to, and I think that takes a lot out of his game. And I just think you'll get the best out of him. I don't think Sweden's ever really gotten the best out of Forsberg. I think that's a big issue. They also lacked a lot of pace, honestly. I think Claesson did a good enough job, but, you know, they were missing someone like Sam Larsson in their squad from PSV, who is a more attacking-minded winger, a bit better pace, you know, better delivery, more technical ability. I think Sweden really lacked that technical ability to get out of certain situations that they may have found themselves in, and I think that's where their deficiencies were. Not to mention, you know, I think Berg and Torvin are a good target man, but if you play them both, you know, who's going to stretch the back four? You know, Forsberg is running his socks off all match long. Claesson's doing the same, but you don't really have any genuine pace in that side, and I think that's where things fell apart for Sweden. They had a lot of chances where they could hit someone on the break, and it just didn't materialize because, you know, Toivonen and Berg may as well be Tiger tanks running around there, and I think that's a big problem. As for England, I think they dealt with it well. I think they're one of those teams that we've seen grow in the tournament. I know they started brightly, and, you know, they had that maybe the hiccup against Belgium, and it shows that, you know, they should probably just rely on their strongest 11 possible. But that said, Steve pointed out again, when Kane isn't just that focal point further forward, when he drops deep and he gives the midfield a problem and then allows Sterling so much space and freedom to make those off-the-ball runs forward, I think that's what England are at their best. And someone else brought up in the chat box, you have to question now, should Dele Alli start against Croatia? Because what has he genuinely done in this tournament to really sort of keep his place in the 11? If you go with someone who is a bit more pacey, a bit more direct, you know, better off the ball, you could maybe make a shot for Rashford getting a start in the 11 instead of him. Someone mentioned Jamie Vardy as well as another option. I think England really have to look at what they've done well this tournament in regards to going forward, and they have to really look at the fact that Croatia are going to be dead dog tired coming in against them, as we mentioned before, with two penalty shootout wins. You know, they're going to be exhausted, and they haven't really rotated their squad that much. They've been using their strongest 11 possible in every single match. I think they have to sort of play on that fact and really use the fitness issue. Yeah, I know Ali scored, but scoring a goal doesn't mean you played well. The two different things are not really, you know, connected necessarily. I think England should do well. I think England did well against Sweden. I think Sweden did well enough to get further than anyone actually expected, because no one expected them to get out of the group in the first place, and that honestly comes down to Germany. But it'll be interesting to see how England deal with Croatia. It's another animal, a more technically gifted one, but I think England should be okay. I think England will actually make the final.
Yes, brilliant stuff from the pair of you. The only thing I have to add is I remember during the qualifiers for this, Sweden, and I had to go and check this, and I've just looked, they were top goal scorers in their group, 26 goals in 10 games, but when you got the likes of Luxembourg, and I thought, didn't that bloke Berg get a lot of goals? He did, he got 8 goals, but then I'm just looking at that, and he got 4 of them against Luxembourg in one game, so maybe that was a slightly misleading, but I did expect a lot more from Sweden. And it's a shame that my brethren, because I'm 8% Scandinavian, they're out. But I've had it rechecked, and I'm now Croatian actually. So that's who I'll be supporting in the next round. Right, we're going to move on to if people want to put their questions in. I've already been making note of the questions. The first one is for you, Steve, from Peter Coulson. He says, "Who has made the biggest tit of themselves this World Cup? Maradona, Neymar, or Josh for saying that Brazil would slaughter Belgium? It could be 7-1 or someone else." Oh, cheeky.
It's hard to choose. I mean, Maradona's been making a tit of himself for years. I mean, whether he's like being videoed on planes with massive bags of cocaine, being videoed in holiday resorts dancing to techno at 8 o'clock in the morning, charlied off of his nut, or whether it's making a real tit of himself at Puma sponsor dinners in expensive Mayfair hotels. Neymar, ballroom dancing, rolling around, he's a big candidate. Josh has been making a complete and utter penis of himself in the WhatsApp chat box. I think his wife, probably, if he says it's coming home once more, she's probably going to divorce him and smash his phone up with a hammer. Actually, I'm hoping she will. Might be suggesting to her that she does. Really hard to say, really. I don't know. I think Neymar has to be Neymar, doesn't it, really?
True.
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree. Again, it just seems like any way he's found to make the spotlight shine on him, even in a negative light, he'll take it, because I think it's just more about just, you know, getting the attention he think he deserves. Maybe he didn't get enough of it at Barca, and this is the residual aspect of that. I'm not quite sure. But I just feel like instead of trying to bring attention to yourself, just let your game do the talking. You know, if you're as good as people think and as you rate yourself, then just play your game and see how it goes. I think it should really be that simple at the end of the day. So I would go with Neymar as well.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could disagree with that. Or I could do, but I'm leaving my English bias out of this. Okay, Loki has had a couple of questions. The first one is Loki73 says, for you, Steve, after Kane loses his leg, Welbeck comes in and wins the World Cup final. Could it happen? Or it could happen, could it?
Well, it could happen, but I think Rashford might get a call up in front of Welbeck first on grounds of age, but it could happen.
Drew, are you surprised that Welbeck's only had, what, I think 10 or 11 minutes the whole World Cup, even when games, I mean, Vardy hasn't done much, has he?
I don't think Welbeck should even be in the squad, but that's my opinion.
So. it might be now, because Vardy's injured.
Is he?
Vardy's done his groin, hasn't he?
Oh.
We have another candidate for biggest dick in the World Cup from Mr. Kennedy in the chat box, has reminded me about the guy with the Iran that failed with that flip throw-in.
Oh, well, you have to take it again.
Yeah.
That's slightly embarrassing. You haven't got the pictures like you have wherever he plays. Next question, we'll start with Drew on this one. From Thunder Road, who is our resident bad boy. We let him away with almost murder, but he's actually put a good question. Oh, no, this is for Steve. He says, Steve, how did Poland bottle it after Lord Hillwood's preview? I put my Barbican Pirates donation money on them to get through the group.
Well, let's be fair, the bookie's getting it rather than Chris wasting it. It's a lot better use of the money.
It's only got a pair of dying trousers that are too tight.
Leather trousers, probably. It'd be parading around Malta in leather shorts with braces. Poland's biggest problem, as I said in the preview, is Nawalka, the coach, who is now no longer the coach. He, despite all the goodies at his disposal, he doesn't really have the tactical experience and nous to know how to get the best out of them. And he has a horrible conservative edge where he goes back to his old favourites. It's like a drug addict who just can't resist having that one extra fix of ex-Legia Warsaw players who are shy and over 30. And, you know, Poland were an embarrassment in the World Cup. They never got started. They never got going. There was no plan.
Players were down in the media over there.
Resigned silence. Basically, there were memes. There were piss take memes in advance going around of Poland's World Cup plan. Game one, get beaten. Game two, try to show up, get beaten. Game three, you're knocked out. And game four, win the game. It doesn't mean anything. Come home, you know, ashamed. So, I think now the question is who they're going to Boniak, Krzysztof. Zbigniew Boniak, the chairman of the FIA, said, you know, they've got to now look at appointing a new manager. The problem is that the manager they can afford isn't going to be able to do the job. The other problem was that I did hear that there were splits in the squad, that the older, more experienced players didn't even want the younger kids, especially some of the younger kids playing in Italy in the squad or even in the training, being pathetic. But, you know, if you want to really point fingers at people, it's the likes of Rybus, Błaszczykowski, and the old guard, even Fabianski, who were in that clique, and they just didn't turn up. And Robert Lewandowski needs to hang his fucking head in shame, going away from World Cup and not scoring one goal.
Terrible. Right, question for you, Drew. I haven't put these in any kind of order. They're actually working out in the right order. Archie says, do you think Xhaka can become good this season for Arsenal? He made the same mistake he has made all season for Arsenal versus Sweden. I think this is make or break season for him. I know we're not too much touching on Arsenal because this is only World Cup stuff, but yeah, what do you make of that question?
I think he improved a little bit last season. But again, I mean, we've never really used Xhaka to his full potential at the club. You saw more of it from him when he was at Gladbach for sure. And I think Torreira is going to answer a lot of those questions. I mean, first of all, we don't even know what Emery is going to do in regards to the system and how many Mitchells is going to use. Our business sort of seems like if Torreira is coming in and we're trying to keep Ramsey, then we'd go three in midfield. I think that would actually shoot Xhaka because Torreira would be the deepest of the three. Ramsey would be allowed to go make those runs off the ball. Xhaka can create from deeper areas. I think that's what you want. So I think this season for him, like a lot of our other players, I think all the questions will be answered, or at least some of them. I know it's off topic, but I think that's also why I think we actually should keep Mustafi. Because I think under a coach who is a better organizer, who understands defensive tactics a little bit better, who holds players accountable, I think you might see a better player in Mustafi because you saw a better player in Mustafi in large spurts for his Arsenal career. People forget how good he was in his first 6 months when he first came to the club. So I think that I don't know if this is necessarily his make or break Arsenal season, but I do think that you have to sort of say, come the end of this coming season, if he hasn't really kicked on, then you have to say that maybe this club isn't for him. That doesn't mean he's a bad player. Sometimes good players just don't fit the clubs. You know, that's just the way football works. It doesn't mean that they're overrated. It doesn't mean that, you know, they're overhyped. You know, it's sometimes you just need that right fit, no matter how good you are. So I think we'll see what Xhaka coming into the season. But I think we'll see a better version of him, but I don't think we're going to see the very best of him, though.
Sad. Okay, I thought he was quite good in a couple of the early games for Switzerland, but again, what do I know? Right.
The thing is, though, I mean, you know, it's like I've just decided I'm not going to judge any of our players now at all until I've seen what Emery's doing. I think what's going on now at the club, you look at these training videos, it's quite clear they cut the video because his assistant wants to have a word and correct someone. Some of the things they're doing on there, they've... You know, you can see the players who are actually having difficulty doing it. They've not done before. But so, you know, like Drew says, when you see them in a new system, in a new strategy, with everybody there and present, perhaps it's really good that all our players are back so they can have a proper pre-season and be ready, you know, and City and Chelsea and Spurs players won't be back yet and they'll all be half bludgeoned.
No, I absolutely agree with that. You know, it's as I discussed with someone the other day, it's everyone is hyping up Emery and saying that, oh, you know, we're going to go on and win the league, and, you know, if we don't have a trophy this year, it's a failure. But people forget that it takes time, especially after someone who was at Arsenal as long as Arsene Wenger was, for a new coach to come in to change the entire culture of the club in footballing terms. The way players, he's going to train them differently. He has different ideas. You know, his standards are going to be at a different level. That all takes time. The more time our players have to come in and sort of bed themselves with a new manager and vice versa, the better it is for us. And again, that's why I think that you can't really judge any of our players early on in the season. You're going to have to wait at least 3 or 4 months into the season, halfway through, to know that who is really getting on under him and who is not, or if he's even able to work with some of these players or not. The fact that he's done as much business as he has maybe should be telling us that while it's nice that we're doing business, it's also nice to see that maybe some of these players who we have rated before aren't good enough. So, I don't know. Questions will be answered.
I mean, I think the other thing is we haven't seen any outs yet. I think they've concentrated on that. They've been like, right, okay, this is a window which now the Premier League clubs are moaning that they've made a mistake in ending it so short in a World Cup year. You've seen our club go out there and buy what they want and who they want. They've got their targets. Now you're probably going to see some people disappear. But I think what the telling period is going to be around January, because I think that'll be the first time where we see those people that Emery's not really pleased with, the ones that Arsenal are trying to sell. I think you just look at those videos, the vocal, strident, physical gesturing and demonstrating by Casido of what he wants from players, where he wants them to go, the whole way that the training sessions are taken at much higher tempo. Two training sessions a day, not one. And the whole squad, including the youth squad, working together as well. So it's very, we have to just wait and see and be patient.
It's funny to me that that's normal here, you know, doing 2 a day. Some coaches even do 3 a day training sessions in preseason for the first week or two. It's important to get the players up to speed, not just fitness, but understanding what the coach expects of them. I think it's good that we are seeing that, but I mean, again, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. We don't know how that's going to be put into practice in all the training that's going to come in when we start playing matches. Like, it's all well and good, you know, training videos and training pictures are all well and good of players, you know, covered in sweat and sharing water bottles. I love it. It's fantastic. But it doesn't actually mean anything. Yeah, we don't have actually any tangible evidence. We don't. It could all go to shit against, you know, City and Chelsea in the first two matches. We don't know yet.
Don't get me wrong. I think, you know, there will be players who can't adjust to it. There will be players who won't be able to handle. I mean, he hasn't started with the video work yet. No one's going to go out there and open up their little black book and show their secrets and kiss and tell, are they? Before the season starts. And, you know, I'm pretty sure this whole process they're going through now is publicly let's get the clubs back, the fans closer back to the players and the club by being open and showing all this and making it very clear that it's all different, it's a new start and everything like that. And then, you know, on the other side of it, it's like, well, okay, actually what we're doing is we're assessing everybody, we're seeing how it works and what can fit, and they are going to use games to try shit out, you know. And
that's the thing. I'm not faulting what we're being shown. I'm faulting the fan reaction to what we're being shown.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that frustrates me.
I mean, I saw somebody yesterday say, oh, if we don't win a trophy this year, he's got to go. And it's like, well, the guy's got to put right a decade of no defensive training. The guy's got to put a decade of Jerry Payton fucking our goalkeepers up, right? The guy's got to put a decade of being the worst team in the Premiership when they lose the ball. So, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to make a cake and go and present it on the British Bake Off, you know, come in third place and be generally happy. The guy's got to rebuild the fucking bakery and the ingredient shop. So, you know, let's be patient and see how the cakes taste.
Right, and that's the point. It's just, again, it's nice to see, and I do agree that I think the club's trying to get that reconnect with the fan base. That's super important. Fans are the lifeblood of a club. But I think it's the fan reaction to what we're being shown, saying, oh, you know, this is that and the third. Steve Bould smiling, we're going to win the league. It's like, I understand that you want to be optimistic, but there's a difference between being optimistic and, you know, being a little bit silly in that optimism. You have to be sensible in your optimism. I think if any fan can sit there and say, we should be targeting trying to get back into Champions League and any trophy win would be a sweet bonus, I think that's a good first season. You can't just go ahead and say, okay, we need to win the league this year. That's not how regime changes work. Sometimes it does happen. Sure, it doesn't mean that we're not incapable of doing it, but you have to set realistically tiered goals when you have a regime change after 20 plus years. That's how you have to look at it.
I mean, I think also this process does, it completes, if you like, Ivan Gazidis' Domestos bleaching out of the club, where basically as soon as Arsene Wenger was gone, he was like marching around the corridors at the Emirates, sacking every fucker left, right and centre, who'd even sort of said good morning to Arsene Wenger. And ITKs were committing suicide all over Twitter because all their sources were fired. And the only sources that were left were Ivan, Raul Sanyei, or Sven Mislintat, and Unai Emery once he was announced, and no one knew any of them, so they were all buggered. You know, I think this sort of like the process Emery and Casido and Bold and Missing Stat and the others are going through now is also the last bit of the, as I think you will see players like Akpom and such like go, but also Jack Wilshere has gone today. I mean, I understand Jack Wilshere was told that Torreira is coming in. He's going to be in front of you in terms of seniority. So, you know, basically, I think, you know, he's quite ruthless in moving people on. Jack's gone to West Ham. Good luck to him. And there again, on another side, Lucas Perez is back. Lucas Perez has changed his profile to being an Arsenal player again. And maybe Lucas Perez has got a second chance at Arsenal. Hope so.
Hopefully. Right, gents, we've only got a few more minutes to go. So there's a double-headed question from Loki73. He says, how torn are you between England winning and the Spurs claiming the glory? It makes me sick. And that was followed up by Sir Antonius Block, who says, it makes me sick that so many Arsenal fans are supporting Spurs. There you go. That sums up why I'm not backing the team I've backed for the whole of my life up until Harry Kane was made captain. He got these other Muppets in there. Do you two want to say anything on that, Drew? Quickly.
I mean, I think it's a little bit silly, to be honest. I mean, for 12 months out of the year, for 2-3 years out of four, Real Madrid fans absolutely hate Gerard Piqué. But when he puts on a Spain jersey and the World Cup's on, they root for Gerard Piqué. You know, they want Spain to win. I think obviously you support your club, but I think it's so, and this is from an outsider's perspective, obviously, because I'm not English, but from, it seems to me that there's so many people who are so ingrained with club over country, and they take those club loyalties and rivalries into the national team outlook. And I think that harms the whole process, honestly. And I think someone brought it up that England's greatest generation over the last 20 years failed despite the talent level, because all those, and even Rio Ferdinand said it, because they were more concerned about club rivalries in the England camp than actually trying to come together as a team and trying to win something for England. I think you see that in the fan base. You know, I hate Thomas Müller all the time because I follow Dortmund, but you know, when he puts on a German jersey, I hope Thomas Müller scores 86 goals. I think that's, you have to get your priorities. So while I despise Harry Kane as an Arsenal supporter, if I was an England fan, I would then say, you know what, if he's going to fire 10 goals in the World Cup and bring in the trophy since first time since 1966, that would be my priority. And then once it's over, I can go back and hit him literally the next day afterwards. That's just me, though.
Steve, we've got 3 minutes to do this, and that includes predictions, so you can have a minute on this if you need it.
You know, for me, it's the same. I despise all Middlesex individuals, fans, board members, players. But, you know, it's England, and I think what they've done is very good for the the country, English people in England, because it seems to have brought everybody together. Everybody's out having fun and enjoying it, and there's a success. It's like a big party. And I think the state that Britain's in, it's so divided. I think they need something like this to sort of, you know, bring them together. And if this group of players can do that by being united themselves in a way that, unlike their predecessors, then great. I think Southgate's doing a good job.
Fair enough. But no, my priorities goes everything Arsenal, everything anti-Spurs, England. So, I mean, but the only consolation I've got is if we do win the World Cup, because I am still English, and I'm not even British, I'm English. If we do win the World Cup, then Harry Kane will get sold to Real Madrid, and then the Spurs collapse will come even sooner than we ever hoped, because Dele Alli seems to be a one-hit wonder season. And yeah, that's the only thing I can console myself with. But it's me, John, and Chris seem to be the only ones on the pod who really feel like that. Okay, we've had another couple of questions we haven't really got time for. We're going to be back on Thursday to do another show, because I can't do Fridays because I'm busy eating curry with my mates. So,
going to do some shout outs of people in there. There's,
I might do it at the end, depends how quickly we get through the predictions.
Okay, okay.
Predictions for the I've moved the page all the way up now, haven't I? Start with you, Drew. England v Croatia. What's your prediction?
I think 2-1 England, actually. I think Kane will score the first.
And Steve, what do you reckon?
I think it'd be 1-1 in normal time, and I think England will nick it in the last minute with a Kane header from okay. A corner.
And I think this is the first proper decent team that England have come up against, but they are absolutely on their arses in the amount of hours they've played. I'm hoping for a 1-0 free kick, Luka Modric. That's what I've got my fingers crossed for. Drew, France, Belgium.
I think 3-2 France.
Ooh, do you think, like me, it's going to be a ding-dong of a game?
Yeah, I think it actually will. I think it'll be pretty open. I don't think Martinez will back down. So.
Good. Steve?
I think it's going to be a ding-dong of a game. I don't think it's going to be as easy as France might think it is. But I do think France will win. I think eventually, actually, they'll win 3-2. I think it'll be something like Griezmann smashing the ball in from about 30 yards in the last minute while the keeper's not concentrating. which we've seen quite a bit of in the World Cup, actually.
We did. It goes through their arms. And so you two are predicting a France-England World Cup final. That is definitely...
Yeah.
So realistically, I think you're both probably correct. That is what it's going to be. And then Oli Giroud will win the World Cup for France. Excellent. Right, so as Steve reminded me, a quick thank you to... We've been going for 1 hour and 44 seconds. So to... Dramiga, and there's Mike there who's given me permission to call him Mike. Alonso, Spencer, Mr. Kennedy, Loki, 73, Peter Coulson, Archie. Well, that's you, Drew, that you don't count. You're already here. Ben Murphy, Travis, Gentile, 1969, our very own Mr. Goonaholic, and our very own Mystic Josh. Or it could be Magic Josh if you pay him enough. Hervoge's there. Oh, my mate who's sent me pictures of a Croatian newspaper the other day on WhatsApp. Yeah, so people want you back, Voge. I've said to you, I'm never going to get you. Mr. Herman, they want you back. So we might get you back for the after the semi-finals. And who else is there? Mr. Kennedy, Archie, Thunder Road. Thunder Road is always there. He's asked when I'm going to get my tooth sorted. I've got to ring up and make an appointment. I've got to get a special dentist where they've got a chair that I can wheel backwards into and they tilt me back like this in it. And that thing is very few and far between. Kevin Laback, who else is in there? Oh, my mate, Mr. Morris, Mr. Waffle, Rudy Wilson. Hello to Rudy's son, Maxon, who turned this off. And Maxon is only 9 months old. So Rudy's a long-time listener there, so hello to you. And have I missed anyone else? I'm just going further and further up the place. Oh, Jove was in here. Jonas, thank you very much for joining us. Sir Antonius Block. Now, that is a name that you're not really going to remember or forget, is it, with a long thing like that? I think that's about it, yes. Oh, Pablo Amar, not Amar, sadly, is in there. And I'll have one more quick scroll up the top. People are turned off by now, so it doesn't matter. Oh, DK's been there. Of course he has. And there was someone called Barry was there. So, Drew, final thoughts? Who said that? I wasn't looking. Was that you?
It was me, and I was just going to say that there's 64 people watching, and we've only got 35 likes.
Well, at least we haven't got 110 thumbs down, have we?
No. Give that thumbs up a little tickle, gents. You know you want to.
Oh, yeah. Any final things you'd like to say before we go?
No, just looking forward to Aubameyang and Lacazette combining for 53 goals this season.
Wow. So I'll take it you'll join us if we want you for a podcast again during the season.
Yes, let me know.
Good, lovely. Steve, any final wise words that don't involve you laughing at Lewandowski? The Polish Andy Cole is back.
Yes, he has regressed. Yes, maybe he's become the Polish Mr. Muller, his teammate from Bayern Munich. Perhaps that's what's rubbed off on him. All I would like to say is thank the Lord for the demise of Gerry Payton. Our goalkeepers may not be ruined.
And we're all very happy, of course, that it is now Mo 10. What better way to end this podcast? Thank you very much for watching, dear listener and dear watcher. We will be back on Thursday. Mr. Hulan Frundenden is going to go and give the plasterers a slap, a dry slap, I hope, because they're drywall specialists. Breathe. And I'm not sure who else will be back, but there should be a few of us. Jason hasn't been on because he is going to be on. We won't be back Thursday. We're doing a transfer podcast on Thursday.
Jason's doing it.
Right, we'll be back on Friday because my friends are all useless and they don't get it till 8:30. So we'll be back at maybe 7 o'clock on Friday and Jason will be doing a transfer update show. He's probably screaming all the way through this. You can't push off for Thursday, boy. Oh, he'll be screaming that because I can't hear you, Jason. This is pre-recorded, you tit. So you can't even shout at me and tell me to get on with it. I'm just going to take my time now.
Is he abusing you by WhatsApp, by any chance?
No, he abuses me whichever way he can. He's had some special T-shirts made, and he sent me one. And I've been told I've got to wear it live. He's gifted me one. Anyway, people, I'm waffling on like I tend to do. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much to everybody in the chat box. Thank you very much to Mr. Hollenfreud. That's okay. Thank you very much, Drew.
Thanks, bud.
And thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks, pleasure. Good to chat to everybody.
Right, and we will be back Thursday and Friday. Oh, we do spoil you. That's it. Goodbye.